So, hello, welcome to this new episode of Sandtonbetriebe. This time we're going to do it in English since we have an amazing guest. She's based in Amsterdam. And we're very happy to have Erica on the podcast. And we're going to talk about her life story and life events. She mentioned and published in a LinkedIn post a couple of weeks ago. So, Erica, we're very happy to have you on this show, on this podcast, and to learn from you, and also to, yeah, talk about the story you brought today and about what you talk very openly, which I find amazing. So, yeah, happy to have you.
Welcome, thank Erica. You. So nice to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm very honored to be here on this podcast. I've been following it online on LinkedIn, so I'm very happy that there is an English version and to be part of it.
It's very amazing. So maybe for the context, Erica and I, we met roughly 5.5 years ago, 6 years ago in Dublin. So we have a past together since we worked with the same company in the fancy tech world. And very happy that we shared this experience. So now you're based in Amsterdam. I'm now based in Munich. Charlotte is in Berlin. So we make it happen throughout Europe to speak to each other. And the reason why we speak today is that you published a LinkedIn post, I think 4 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago?
A couple of weeks ago, I think.
Yeah,
it was 3 weeks ago. Basically it was about my personal experience with early cervical cancer. So I was the first diagnosed like 2 years ago, and I had to undergo like emergency surgery during COVID. It was like November 2020, like all the hospitals were overwhelmed and closed, and even just being able to get like emergency surgery in that time was a luxury and a privilege, to be honest. I had to travel countries to be able to get it. So I was living in France. I went to Spain, where my family lives, to actually get it done.
How did you realize that it's cancer? Was it just a general checkup and then suddenly the doctors told you there is something, or did you have some pain before? Because this is always something I ask when I speak to people who got in touch with cancer. How did you find out, actually?
Yeah, so it was still quite early, so there weren't really any like symptoms out yet. But the way it happened is that during kind of beginning of the pandemic, so March 2020, I got pregnant, mm-hmm. and was together with my husband at the time. And what happened is that at the second month, I went through miscarriage, which was again another like kind of critical life event that mm-hmm. happened at the time. It was very traumatic, and it was maybe even more than cancer sometimes when I look back. Mm-hmm. And so while, of course, during miscarriage, you need to go through like a series of checkups just to make sure that everything is just normal again, let's say, or, you know, that like there's nothing left. So it's a bit like, it's very cruel as a process itself, because you need to make sure that basically everything is coming out from your uterus. And it's a tough time. And when I was there, my gynecologist, she was also like, okay, let's just run a few checks, because, you know, like I had been living in Ireland for a few years, so I wasn't really like in Ireland, like the medical system is another topic that we can leave for another time. So we ran a few checks, and it came out. So actually, I remember the first time I got an email from her saying we need to talk, and then we spoke on the phone, and she mentioned for the first time the word cancer. It was actually a few days in the summer. Well, like there was so much happening in my life. I was just newly married, and it was just very sad, because I was like, wow, am I gonna like die in 3 months, you know? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes like these also like the first things we do is that we connect the word like cancer to, oh, it's happening now, I'm dying tomorrow, because that's how it's portrayed in movies and social media, while it's actually, it's way more of a longer battle. And this, I think I would find out like later. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, so in summer, like the results came back, and she's like, maybe we need to do a surgery. And then I said, no, I don't think so. I don't think it's going to happen. So no worries. Maybe I misinterpreted it. So I had a bit of like, also like bad medical experience, all in all.
Oh, wow.
Because then I went back for another check in October. Mm-hmm. And this is in October 2020. And this is actually when they said, we did another round of checks, of checkups. And then they said, yeah, you need to go get surgery next week. And I was in the middle of like moving houses. And I decided with my husband to go basically traveling around Europe because it was COVID. And it was like where everybody was kind of turning into a digital nomad. So I didn't have a house at the time. I was living out of a suitcase. All of my belongings were in a storage in Paris. And I went back to Spain to do the first surgery 2 years ago. The recovery was quite long. And so after that, I was like, yeah, it's good. I'm done. I'm out of the woods. Like, I've been doing checkups every 6 months for the last 2 years. And during summer, I was traveling in the US and I got the results from my summer checkups in August. And I got that email that it was back and we had to do additional checks. And I remember the day I received this communication, I was just feeling devastated. It was just a lot. It was like the world as I knew it was ending again, like 2 years ago.
At this point in time, when this email came and you were abroad, were you actually like mentally done with this cancer topic and you said, I got the surgery now, it's gone, and now I'm going to focus on my future, also experiencing this miscarriage and all these kind of topics, and then suddenly really unexpected this email came? Or did they kind of prepare you and tell you this kind of cancer could be really aggressive and could come back? So how did you feel?
I wasn't prepared at all. So because we caught it quite early, I mean, it's been early cervical cancer. We were able to remove everything. The margins were very clean with the first surgery.
Okay.
And also, like, after that, of course, because when you go through something like so big, like, your life is impacted. So I went through divorce with my husband. So, like, it's been like the last few years of my life. Like, now this first surgery was 2 years ago. I've been like extremely eventful. Like, there's been so much. I relocated from France to Amsterdam. I changed all my life. I went through divorce. And the topic of cancer felt like something that was in the past. And it's also something that I never openly spoke on social media before because it's complicated. It's complicated to tackle and to handle. And I think also in general for people, like, what happens is that you would feel shame, you know, for something like this. It's not something that you want to tell people. Like, there is like, and also something like cervical cancer or breast cancer or like, a lot of like different illnesses that are actually tied to the reproductive system. Basically what's happened is that my body was not working. I got pregnant and I lost the baby after trying for a long time with my ex. And the miscarriage rate itself was saying, I'm not woman enough because I cannot, like, my body cannot carry a baby.
So you mean it's quickly a psychological topic as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the psychological aftermath of what happened to me in the last couple of years has been tough. And like, the only thing that actually helped me kind of go through it and be okay, because I'm okay now, it's actually weekly therapy. So I see my therapist every week and we talk about everything and we examine and analyze everything, all the overthinking I have in my head. And it's been like the greatest gift, to be honest. So yeah, so to be honest, like, for then in the next 2 years, I was really worrying about basically changing countries again. And like, miscarriage and getting pregnant was not even a topic anymore because I wasn't with my ex anymore. So what happened is that I was just focusing on getting a new job. I got laid off in the summer. Like, if we talk about critical life events, I had like so many in the past 2 years we can choose from. But again, for me, like, the main thing was that I really thought the cancer topic was closed because all the latest checkups, they came back clean. So yeah, so then when I was 2 years ago, like, in September, 2 years later, I was just traveling and was on this amazing trip and got the email. And when it happened, I started crying for a whole day. And I was just, why me? Why is this happening to me? Like, why again? Like, I already gave so much. Like, why are all these bad things happening to me? Am I a bad person? Do I deserve this? And this is just some of the things I've been thinking about. So it's been quite tough to handle. I had to cut my trip short because, of course, like, health comes first. So I wanted to come back home just to do all the checks. And again, it wasn't like a check like, oh, you need to get surgery again, but it was like, oh, there's something we need to check up on again. So it's also like the unknown that surrounds those kind of illnesses. Like, as mentioned before, when I first got diagnosed, like, I thought, oh, I'm gonna die in 3 months, you know, I'm gonna leave my husband a widow. Like, this is the kind of thing I was thinking about. And now I know it's more of a long, kind of lengthy process, and it takes so much time. Like, this is what hurts the most, like all the uncertainty, all the overthinking, the not knowing, living with, like, you feel there is like an expiration date, you don't know if you can trust your body. Like, there's so many feelings that are hard to place on a map. And so that's why, like, for me, like, and then of course I started doing my test again. You have to wait a few weeks to get the result from a biopsy. Like, everything just takes time. Like, it's not so immediate. Like, oh, they tell you what you have and we can act on that. So I got my diagnosis. So I did my checkups in August 2022. I got diagnosed again in September, and I could do the surgery again 8th of November. So it takes time. And during all this time, I had to start a new job. Like, life goes on, you know, like, life is not just waiting for you to be under the cover, like, crying. And there are some days I don't want to see people, and I just feel life is too much, because it is sometimes, you know, and it's okay to acknowledge and validate how we're feeling. So what I did is that, because I was starting a new job, I didn't tell anyone about this, because you don't want to start a new job and say, hey, I'm a girl with cancer, I need to have a surgery, you know. Like, I didn't want to be that person, because I felt, again, probably shame, and I didn't want to be the problem, you know, because with all the things that have been happening to me, I felt, wow, I am a problem, I am the problem. So what happened is that I didn't say anything, not even to my manager, until actually the surgery week came. And then I was like, I actually want to open up about this. And that's when I actually wrote that post that you were mentioning. So sorry for the backstory, but I feel
it's kind of so important.
No, it's good, yeah.
That's the context to where I've been.
No, that's like, as you said earlier, you had like a series of life events, so a lot to cope with and a lot to, like, to digest also. And what we talk about quite frequently during the last episodes is about the importance of the network and surrounding and the people you're close with. And I can totally understand the feeling of shame, because I had the same at the time, so 4.5 years ago. How was it for you? Because, like, those events happening to you, plus you feel like you cannot talk openly, it must have added like another layer of weight. What was your impression of, like, the first time, or how did you get used to the feeling of, okay, things are happening to me, how can I communicate with the people close to me, or even further down of my network?
Yeah, so it's there's few things to it. So something you mentioned, having a support system around you, I think it's super important. I'm not one that usually relies a lot on others, but I let others rely on me quite often, and that kind of creates some synergies that are, you know, sometimes kind of misplaced, you know, like, sometimes I was there after my surgery, like, just consoling a friend who is going through like some issues with a guy she's dating, and I'm like, oh, maybe it should be the opposite, you know, because there are some roles in relationship that sometimes are really hard to kind of go through. So for me, like, I mean, the main thing is that, and I had the same also, like, both miscarriage and cancer, they both were carrying a feeling of distrust in my body and overall. But like, something that really helped, but this is also something I've always done. For people who don't know me, like, I wrote 3 books. So I'm a published writer in Italy. And the thing is that I'm used to kind of tell my story in writing. So that's already something that I think helped, because I was like, I can tell my story, and I was already I mean, I published my first book when I was 21. I'm now 30. So like the thing is that I knew what it felt to put something of yours out there that you feel extremely vulnerable about,
yeah,
and see what happens. And usually what you get is that you get a lot of support. I think you guys probably have also seen it with the podcast. Like when you publish something new, when you go out with something new, like it's really hard because you're like, what? Are people going to judge me? Are they going to laugh about me? What are they going to think?
And but then did you experience it in a way that people open up more after you speak publicly or write publicly open about topics? And then maybe even friends who were a bit skeptic at the beginning or had like a little bit of fear to proactively ask you about how do you feel after you published things? It's easier to start talking about people, about these critical life events. What's your experience?
Yeah, so for me was, so what happened is that before opening up about the cancer this year, I opened up 2 years ago about the miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
And the miscarriage actually brought me to a kind of like an understanding that women are usually told, there's also like, of course, gender bias in this. Women are usually told they need to be in silence, that everything needs to kind of swept under the rug. And there's no like, yeah, we need to be in order, polite, educated, we don't need to make noise. And so that's actually, starting that brought me to write my third book, which is about miscarriage, because miscarriage is extremely common. It happened like one pregnancy out of four, it's 25%. So my book is called 25%, one out of four women. It's also available in English. And it goes over kind of all these bias of, you know, like not telling, like, the whole topic of pregnancy and miscarriage is made to control women's bodies because women cannot tell that they're pregnant until they reach the third month or the 12th week. And why? Because then at that point, the pregnancy is safe. So basically,
that's a good point, actually. I never thought about it. Yes, it's always this, yeah, let's wait after the 3 months check. Yeah. And then you know that it's healthy and I can tell everyone. And if something happens before, we're not going to tell anyone that I was pregnant in general, right? Yeah, because, how stupid.
Yeah,
because
we don't want to tell if something. So when I went through,
we just want to give the good news, right?
Yeah. So if a woman is going through pain and a good news and a trauma, she needs to be in silence. Because again, when it's so early, a lot of time is more of the woman pain than the couple. Of course, there's a couple pain, but in my experience, it's been very different. It was very different for my partner to understand what I was feeling because it was something that was inside me. So for me, like, this was one of the realization that made me realize, wow, like, it's really unequal. And I've been like basically shut up my whole life. I was shut up by society and everything. So I got to the point where I was like, I'm going to write a book about this. I'm going to tell everyone about, like, we should announce pregnancies as soon as we know it. We should combat, like, fight this bias. And so that's when I wrote my first book. And then I realized that women are silent in so many other situations. So from the project of my third book, I actually founded like an international organization, Women Plot, with a publishing house. So we publish book written by women. We now publish in 1 year and a half over 30 people, over 30 women, or people coming from underrepresented minorities and communities. And then like this for me, like when I started opening up and I did like a lot of interviews. I went on Vanity Fair and a lot of like Italian newspaper to talk about my miscarriage experience. And I realized like this is something that even if you Google, you just find like medical pages. You don't find people telling about their experiences. So it was a great, like I felt amplifying my voice actually helped other people feel a bit better about what they were going through because not everybody needs to tell them stories. Their stories, like I think it's great for people who actually feel that they can do it and they can carry the weight of doing it. But I don't think everybody should do it if they don't feel like comfortable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this for me was for sure one. When I went through separation and divorce last year was again a very difficult time to navigate. And the way I did it, I was like, okay, again, I'm gonna tell my story. And it's less scary when I do it with other people for me. Mm-hmm. So I told my story and I started a podcast. It was called Embracing Failure. I now rebranded it Embracing Life and started it like 1 year ago. And every week we talk about something that's usually perceived as failure and or just some stuff that like just reflections. That's those kind of things that I think it's important to talk about. So we talk about burnout and about the toxic productivity narrative. But we also talk about divorce, mental health, disorders, like, and every kind of like topic that people might be going through, or they might know anyone going through it, and open up. But again, even in my podcast, I was still concealing this cancer thing, because I was like, it was still something that to me, it felt so close home, because I was like, maybe I'm really going to die of this. Like, maybe my life is really not going to last as much. And it's really hard to be confronted with those thoughts after you're like, you're in your 20s and you think like life is limitless, you can do anything. It really goes against what people go through usually in their 20s. Like, usually people start worrying about their health a bit later in life. Having this when none of my friends is going through something like this, it's been different for sure.
Well, the point is, I think we think a lot of people don't go through this during the 20s. I think this is also about the part of speaking openly. But if you look at numbers, for example, mental health numbers, anxiety, this is just a small part. And this is also very high, like there's very high number of people suffering from that in their 20s and even in their teenage age. But also the number of people getting sick during their 20s, it's not zero. It's actually... It's way higher than that. And I think that also comes to representation, because as you said, like, there are people sharing their stories and they're talking about it openly, but most of the time they feel that they need to cover that up, because you want to have like this happy, gloomy life and showing what the 20s should look like. But in reality, you feel completely left alone, because you're way too ashamed and too scared to tell your real story and to really show your real self. Because people might judge you for that. And I think this is super, super important, because from my experience, when I had that with my mother, I felt like also super ashamed. It was like, okay, I'm a burden to someone, because like I bring this huge suitcase of issues and problems and grief and things that are going to trigger me in the next couple of years. That should not be happening to someone in their 20s, but it does. So that's the reason why we talked about that prior to this recording, that it's, I think it's so brave and so important to bring that out. And it should not be that hidden, because it's happening to everyone else in a way, sooner or later.
Sometimes
that's sooner or later. But what's the cancer ratio? Is it 50%? I don't know how many people get cancer in their lives. So no one said... I think I double checked that, but it's quite high actually. So if you don't get it in the 20s, you'll get it in the 30s, 40s, 60s, and no one says you will get it in the 80s when life is almost over. So, and almost over is very harsh, but some people are living until they are 110. But there is never that, like, that point in time where it's supposed to happen. Like, there's a higher ratio or a higher percentage of when it could be happening. Based on your lifestyle, etc. But in so many cases, it's not based on lifestyle. It's not based on something that you did. It's something your body decides to do, whether you can influence or not. And
I think there's a very interesting concept kind of tied to that, which is how we identify as people. Basically, since we are kids, we are told, "Oh, you are extroverted. You are introvert." Like, try to attach values to ourselves, to the person we are, and at some point we let the things that happen to us define who we are. So we let them say, "Oh, I am, you know, my parents are divorced. So I'm the, for example, daughter of divorced parents. I am divorced myself, or I am cancer survivor, or I am, you know, whatever." And the thing is that we shouldn't attach those things, like values from those things to happen to us, as our
identity.
Value, our identity. And I think this is something that I learned a bit the hard way in the last couple of years, because at some point when all of this is happening, you start really wondering, like is it my fault? Like, is it happening because of me? And my therapist, something that she told me that's very interesting, she's like, this is like kind of the lottery of life. You don't know which kind of tickets you're gonna draw.
Yeah.
You cannot choose them. You can choose your attitude towards them. So for me, like, this has been kind of the life-changing magic that I found out. Like, I'm a pretty optimistic person, even like with everything that's been happening to me, and I keep a very positive outlook in life, which again, it doesn't mean that I promote like toxic positivity and saying, yeah, oh, everything is gonna be all right. It's okay to validate when something is going bad and to say how it makes you feel. But also if you just kind of rely on that negative energy, it's like a poison. It's just gonna poison everything in your life. So I really believe that the energy you bring to the world can really mm-hmm. make a change. So if you change your energy, you can change the world.
But yeah, I really like this, what your therapist said with the lottery, because it really shows every day kind of the cards are mixed again for every one of us. And let it be a car accident happening or a miscarriage or whatever, like every day we can be really happy if a day is good, if everyone is healthy, and we go to bed at night and nothing happened. So I think that's a good advice from your therapist to better somehow cope with it, right?
Yeah, it's also about, it's a bit of the gratitude thing, you know, kind of count your blessings. Mm. In the end, like every day, we can find things to be happy about and things to be sad about.
Yeah.
And this is, we have the power to choose, like we have the power to focus on. And the bad things in the end, like they always happen. It can be like something stupid, like, oh, your car broke down in the middle of the street, or, you know, you lost a parent. Like it can be like everywhere in between the spectrum, or in between like, oh, my coffee didn't have enough sugar. Like, can be whatever within the spectrum. And see, like, at the end of the day, like, some things, of course, have, like, things have different weight, but also for different people. And I think it's so important to in the end, just say, okay, this was bad. This made me feel bad. But look, there's also, like, X, Y, Z that was actually positive. And another thing my therapist told me was, you need to imagine life as kind of a circle.
Mm-hmm.
The circle, like the two kind of semicircle, they are like the faces of an emoji. So sometimes it's sad, but then it goes up and it's happy again. And she's like, and this is the circle of life. And this is where, like, you can think it's all about you. And she's like, and in the end, nothing is ever about you, you know?
Yes.
Things that happen to you, they're not because of you. Like, things happen and they happen. But then the only thing you can control, you cannot control what happens to you, but you can control how you react to it. And how you cope with it and what you make out of it. And for me, like, speaking up and about these topics has been a blessing, because I decided to do it. And so many people reached out to say, hey, thanks for sharing that. I'm going through something tough. Like, when you open up and you become vulnerable, there's so much. And I think in the end, like, all of these kind of bad things that happened to me, unlucky things, like these, like these lottery tickets that are not the winning one, let's say, for me, they have been the winning one, because they have defined the person I am today. If I didn't go through all of this, I wouldn't be the person I am today, and I'm very happy I am the person I am today.
I agree with you. It's like, it's such a strong mindset, and also something to always remind yourself that all the things that happened to you are the ones that are shaping you and your character and the values. And I think it's so important to highlight on that. There's one saying, actually my ex-boyfriend used to tell me, and it was like, your words shape your reality. And we have so many words, not that we don't speak them, but we think them. It's also the same concept, that we shape the reality and how we see things in a way. So, do I want to focus on too much sugar in my coffee? Probably not, if you know how valuable life is and how many energy you might need to, I don't know, to go through the day today, for example. Like, as you said, like, we have bad days, we have good days. And on a bad day, I don't want to sit there and look at my coffee and complain about the amount of sugar in there. It's more like, okay, there's sunshine, there's a bird. Like, so finding those small moments, and also talk about it, and also in your mind, so trying to really focus on that. And I find that so important, and I really loved your perspective on that, to say, okay, those happened to me and they shaped me as a person, and in a way I'm grateful for that, because otherwise I've never experienced XYZ, or never had led me to the way or the path I'm now. Example, founding Women Plot, writing your books, speaking on TEDx, which I find so impressive.
Yeah,
it's so amazing. And now having the two collective, plus meeting all the people you have around you. Look at the history, because something things you've never done without, like, yeah, changing your perspective in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. So I totally second the sentence you were mentioning, because it's, I also have it in my notes. Actually, I look at it quite often. It is, the word we speak become the house we live in.
Yeah.
This is like so true. And in the end, like, you know, like all the kind of little luggage we bring, like some days it's like, it's a bit heavier, some days it's lighter, but I think what really makes a difference is to have a support system. So I think this is kind of one of the last notes I have on them, is that for me, like 2 years ago when I went through like miscarriage and first time cancer, it was extremely tough because I was by myself basically. And going through, it was COVID, I was isolated, far away from my family, so I couldn't travel to visit them. And I didn't have the right person with me and the right people around me. So for me, like, it was extremely hard. Because it, like, the person together with me was just saying, no, you're crazy, you're not going through it. And I was, and, you know, it was so painful because everybody was so used to me being the strong person that I couldn't have weaknesses at any point for anything. I couldn't suffer. And now, like, going through this, like, again, and I'm surrounded, like, I move closer to my friends. Of course, now we can travel, so I can see my family more often. I just have such a better support system, and this has made all the difference. One of the main, the things that scared me the most was that, because I'm in a new relationship, was like, wow, now that I have cancer again, is my boyfriend gonna leave me? Because that's what happened before. Is he gonna stop loving me because I'm not lovable anymore?
That's interesting, because you have the perception of yourself that you're the strong person, and you think you need to fulfill that role. And when we we're coming back to the roles from the beginning you mentioned, plus, like, how does this someone else make feel? Like, this is that the concept is kind of off. You're the one struggling, and you need support. But you think about, what can I give the others, and what can I take away from them, instead of focusing completely on your own healing?
Yeah. So this for me was another, like, huge realization during therapies. Like, in the end, we all have kind of emptiness or like some stuff inside of us that impacts the way we live the world. And like, we have so much like trauma and like stuff that we learned that we need to unlearn, like unlearning, like, for example, some patterns, some behaviors. And the work I've been doing in therapy for the past 2 years has been impressive for me. Like, I cannot recommend it enough. Like, when people say, like, what's the secret? I'm like, it's therapy. Like, it's
just therapy. Yeah.
Yeah, because I just wanted to ask, if we now summarize this question, what are your coping mechanisms, and what do you would like to tell other people who are suffering at the moment because of XYZ? Is it what is number one, what helps you most? Is it therapy, or is it a mixture of now having this family and friends support system closer, plus therapy, plus doing all this publishing and podcast speaking? So what is it, a mixture, or do you say this is the one that really helped me?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Charlotte. It's very good. So for me, like, my main coping mechanism, I think, so therapy is one of them for sure. So therapy, and like, I read a lot. So whenever I'm interested about a topic, even like about mental health, I just read a lot about them. So like books, they give me a lot. I've always been I've always been a bookworm. So that's kind of goes together. And then yes, the support system, but more in a wider way than friends and family. So the community around me, and kind of giving back to the community and getting back from the community at the same time. Like, community can have the power really to change the world, because it's not the power of one, but it's the power of many. So for me, like, speaking up, and then, you know, you have people reach out sometimes and just send you a message. And from the podcast, I get so many messages every week from people saying, thank you for touching on that. And one of the best things that someone told me was, so they said, I cannot relate to anything you tell about, because I've never gone through like cancer or like divorce or miscarriage. Like, but still, like your story and the way like you tell it, like, resonates so much to the attitude I want to have to the hardship that I go through in life. So knowing that people, even if they are not living the same critical life events, because in the end, each and every one of us has their own, and they kind of also like waterfall in the consequences in a different way, because they have like different weight for each and every one of us, depending on our story, on our trauma, or like whatever, like we've been going through all of our life. It can see like the most important quality we have as humans is connection and vulnerability. And when we're vulnerable, we are rewarded. When we open up, we connect with others. There's no intimacy without connection. There's no intimacy without vulnerability. So this for me was like one of the main learnings. And so in everything I do, I try to be as open as I can. I think one of my coping mechanisms is for sure like talking with others, listening to other people's story, trying to keep my mind as open as I can.
It's amazing. Like, I'm actually so grateful to talk about things. We're grateful to talk about your story and also the series of events and what came out of that. I think that's like an example of how you took every challenge and every stone that got thrown at you, and then you took it and you dealt with it and you coped in your way, and also like now building on shaping you as a person with this past, but also like looking forward in a positive way. So this is something I'm very grateful to learn from you, because I can imagine it's not easy sometimes, but what you bring to the table, what you share with the people openly, and how you open up the discussions about like critical life events in general, it's impressive, I have to say.
Yeah, look where you are today. I mean, it's you just make such an grounded and self-confident impression when you tell your story, and you are, I think, really a person who gives other people some strength on their way. And yeah, this is the outcome of the critical life events. If they wouldn't have happened, maybe you would be at a different point in life now, regarding where are you as a person and the self-confidence and these kind of things, right? So it's really cool. Yeah.
And again, it's not been linear, you know, like I think this is one
of course, best. Yeah.
I think for
it's
everyone
fluctuating.
Yeah, I think some people, and I also got this, like they're like, oh, like and I love, because I embrace like this kind of new person I am. When I look at my life now, I'm like, wow, I'm like this what I meant when I said I'm grateful for kind of every stone thrown at me, because they were like stepping stones for the person I am today. So this for sure, but then it's not been linear. Like some days are harder than others, but then if you're kind with yourself, and again, it doesn't mean that you pity yourself and you're on kind of the complaint, but if you are kind to yourself and listen, like most of days we don't even listen to ourselves. So therapy for me, for example, was also a great way also like to stop and say, okay, how am I feeling about that? Because my therapist in the beginning, she would just ask, oh, how are you feeling about this? And I was like,
being kind to yourself. I did my 10 minutes meditation today again. Yes, I managed it to start Monday with my little app. And this was the topic the lady mentioned in the end of the meditation. Start being more kind to yourself. Understand your feelings better and don't be so strict. So strict with yourself. That's also good advice. We should just remember ourselves more often. To treat ourselves not that harsh sometimes, right?
Yeah.
It's about the words.
We are sometimes the toughest judge we'll ever have in front of us, you know. Yes. That's why I said I was feeling so much shame, but I was putting that shame on me. Nobody put it, you know. Nobody said you are to be shamed for what you're going through. I made the harsh judgment against myself.
But you feel in a way that you're ashamed of the picture people creating of you, even though they don't. Maybe they're completely overwhelmed with the situation itself themselves. So like this misconception about like how it's supposed to be, how we are supposed to be, how our world should be looking like, it's and I feel like once you experience those particular life events, so Chal and I, we can also speak from our experience, you get a different understanding about those pictures painted of you and those impressions you leave on other people, but are also like being confronted with this type of shame, as you say, it's something you need to figure out, that you put it on yourselves, and when no one else is going to you and say, okay, you're the burden in this case, it's more like we feel we are, because we have this like we have this picture in our minds how it's supposed to look like. And I think this is like the most critical part to really figure out how we can cope with heavy and difficult situations.
Yeah. And if I leave like, if I can leave like one last message would be
yes,
something that really helped, and it's an action item. So everybody who's listening can actually action on this right now. When you're feeling a bit about, okay, who am I? Like, you know, we attach those events to our identity, as we mentioned before. Yeah. One thing I did and one exercise that was very good is that I asked my close friends, my parents, my brothers, just to describe me with three words. And you would be so impressed about the words that come back about you that maybe you've never even associated with you. And they are their values, you know, like, so they're tied to values. So I think it's something very interesting. And you can just do it. Everybody can just send a text to people important in their life and say, hey, can you describe me in three words? And I think it's one.
I will do it.
For Christmas, I think you can do like a roundup of the year and then like ask people for.
Yeah, nice.
Love that. Oh, that's an amazing action item, actually, because you know, you interact with the people that you're close with, plus you're getting also a positive outlook on yourself. I love it. Thank you so much, Erica, for being part of the show and telling your story. Like, I think we could talk for hours.
Yeah.
I was close to grabbing another cup of coffee in this game, but I really loved it and loved your story. Thank you so much for sharing your advice, your story, and also, talking about that openly.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm really, like, so honored and humbled to be here. Like, very happy to be part of this. It's what you're putting together, it's great. So I'm very, very happy to be part of it.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here and your openness. And all the best for you.
Yeah, for you too.
Thank you.